grateful to get to spend a little bit of time with you tonight just to talk about some things that are obviously important to all of us that are here, the issue of parenting and what it means to be an intentional, purposeful, and biblical parent. I've learned so much about parenting just in the few years that my family and I have been at Grace since we moved to Greenville. I'm excited to be a part of this conversation, and I'm really excited to introduce you to you here in just a moment to our panel. We've got three couples from our body. They've been a part of Grace for a variety of amounts of time. They have children in different phases, some overlapping in similar phases, but together, I actually tried to do the math, kind of counting up in my head each of their kids, how old they are, add the next kid, and I got well over 100 years of parenting experience, and I stopped counting. There's a lot of parenting experience on this stage, and what we're going to, the conversation and some of the things that I think these folks have to offer tonight are going to be invaluable to all of us, and I do want to say on the front end before we introduce them that I assured them that we're here representing our failures and our successes as parents, because that's the one thing that is absolutely true about all of us that have kids is none of us really know what we're doing. Fortunately, we follow a God who does know what he's doing. He's the ultimate parent, and he, both in his word and by his own example, when he came to be with us through Christ, we have lots of examples and lots of scripture, biblical wisdom from him on how to parent, because he knew we weren't going to know what the heck we were doing. And he knew how we were going to turn out from our homes was probably not the way he wanted us to do it, not necessarily the way he wanted us to do it when we had children. So we're going to walk together through a journey of a few questions. Thanks for the ones you submitted. Some of you all submitted questions online. We've sort of been gathering questions over the course of the last few weeks and months. This is going to be a continued conversation. So let me go ahead and introduce the panel to you. Y'all come on in. Welcome. And after I do that, we're going to go through a few announcements before we get started. But here to my left is Wes and Leanne Cavan. Some of y'all know Wes and Leanne. They've been around Grace a long time, but I'm going to let you all set the stage for the rest of the couples and tell us how long you've been married, how long you've been at Grace, and tell us about your children.
We have been married for almost 19 years. Is that right? It's a long time. And we've been at Grace right at 14 years. We started looking for a church. Saw my video a few weeks ago, just because we knew that we needed to raise our kids in a godly home, and had been running for a while. So we found Grace, and it's been amazing, not only for us spiritually, but also as we've raised our children. Mac and Morgan. Mac is 14, he'll be 15 in June, and Morgan will be 12 next month.
Great. Thank you. Okay, immediately to my right are the Chiberos, Mike and Cindy, and same questions. How long have you been married? How long have you been around Grace? Tell us about your children.
Great. Well, Cindy and I have been married for 25 years, going in our 26th year of marriage. We've been at Grace about the same as the Cavans, about 14 years. And we have three boys, and I should say three men. Our oldest son has graduated college last year, and he's part of the Culture House here at Grace, was part of their internship program this summer. And then our middle son, Philip, is a sophomore in college, and our youngest son, Nick, is a junior in high school.
And this is the Mylanders, Doug and Sherry Mylander. So same three questions to you. You got the questions now?
Good. Great. Sherry and I have been married for 22 years. It'll be 23 years for us this year in July. We've got three children. Nick is 18, Nate is 15, and Gab is 11. And we've been at Grace now for just over five and a half years.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for being with us tonight. Again, this is a conversation, so we do have sort of a greatest hits, the highlights from all the questions that you all submitted. But as the evening goes on, if we have time at the end, which I hope we do, we're going to do our best to create some time where we can interact a little bit with you all, and you can ask questions maybe that you have on your heart that we weren't able to get to. We'll get there in a few minutes. I got a couple of announcements, and then we'll start our time with regard to parenting. Parent Link, obviously you're here. It is a quarterly conversation, so we have one planned in May, and we have one planned for late August. And those three quarters are all leading up to a late fall, sort of November, mid-November, possibly early December, but somewhere in the late fall, parenting conference. So we're going to have three quarterly parenting conversations. This is the first of those three where we'll feature different panels and we'll feature different questions and try to be as current and relevant and helpful as we can. And those will all be leading up to about 8 or 10 months from now to a late fall parenting conference, similar to Future Women, which we did this past year. We're going to kind of rotate some topics that feel relevant and sort of feel like what God's up to with our body. So that's the first announcement. Continue the conversation, parenting at gracechurchsc.org. You might want to jot that down, or just it's easy to remember. That is an email that we are going to start checking more often. We created it a few months ago, and we use that now for correspondence. Just any issue, any question, we'll use that for these quarterly conversations. We use that as a place that folks can go to email questions or needs that you have. So we want you to continue this conversation. You can also express a desire to connect with a mentor couple. I want to highlight that. It's the second thing right there. Connect with a mentor couple is something that we're actually building a list. Right now it's not a huge list, but it's a building list of folks similar to the folks on these couches right here who, if there's one thing they have on you as a parent, it is a few more years. Some folks that are down the road with their kids who are willing to give some time to meet one-on-one and dialogue. As those folks, some of you may be folks that feel like you have that to offer. We'd love to know if you want to offer that resource. But we particularly want to know if that's a resource you'd be interested in using. Because we'd love to link you up with a mentor couple who might meet with you a couple of times. And depending on how the Lord led that relationship, might be a helpful one to you. So let us know if you're interested in a mentor couple. Let's go to the next slide. Are you protected? Learn how to create a safe and healthy environment for your home without losing all the benefits of the internet. You'll notice on there's a DS, an Xbox, a home computer, and an iPhone. All of those things have places, or similar devices, have places in all of our homes to some degree. We're raising kids in a world that we don't understand. It's a world we're trying to just catch up on. Our kids are so far down the road with their understanding of the internet and the virtual world. And like it or not, that's the world we live in. They've got to. So we got to figure out how to be vigilant and diligent and purposeful and intentional to protect our home. And there are great ways to do that. We've got some resources for you. You'll actually, if you look at the second page of the resource recommendation, there's some filters that are recommended there. But the thing I wanted to let you know most importantly is Sunday, February 19th, we are offering an institute class. It's a two-hour deal. And our IT folks, our facilities and IT folks have created a team of people in our body that have an astounding amount of information. And they're going to walk you through how to protect your home in every way possible. And then they're going to offer the resource of actually coming to help you figure it out, offering some on-site support if you need it. So you don't want to miss that opportunity. So write that down, February 19th. Okay, I think we got Well, it's going to be a great one. It's going to be real practical and real helpful. So, next slide. We're almost through these announcements here. Coming up, Young Men's Roundtable. If you've ever been through Men's Roundtable, you know the value of having a language for masculinity. For four Tuesday nights in a row, beginning April 10th through May 1st, we're going to do a teaching series of the four pillars of authentic manhood that's age-appropriate to 5th through 8th grade boys, and they will come with their dads. So it's a father-son event. So put that on your calendar, and if you can think of somebody else that needs to be a part of that, let them know. We'll be getting the word out for that soon. And then the last one, I believe, is the Daddy-Daughter Dance. It's another equipping event for fathers and daughters. It's the fourth annual Daddy-Daughter Dance that we've had here in Greenville. And it will be Friday, April 27th. I want you to save that date. It's for daddies and daughters of all ages. So it's a really fun event. It'll be desserts and dancing. We encourage you to take her out on a date for dinner beforehand and learn to date your daughter and set the bar high. So that's what that's all about. You'll hear more about it later. I think is that the end of our slides? Great. Let's see. You have in your hands a recommended parenting resource thing. We may refer to this resource list some tonight, but if not, take that home with you. And if you have specific questions, you're welcome to touch base with any of us. But before we go any further and tackle our first question, I'd like to pray for us. So let's pray. Jesus, we thank you for this place. We thank you for the freedom and the space to be here with each other and with you tonight. And we trust your guidance and your leadership. We trust your protecting and leading hand at our homes where our children are tonight. And we're grateful for the freedom to step away and to engage your truth about what family really means and what it's like to shepherd and to lead the next generation. So we lift you up. Thank you for your guidance and your leadership. And we pray you bless this time and lead this conversation. We trust you in Jesus' name. Amen. The first question that we're going to tackle tonight is a general question that I hope will create a common denominator that we can launch from a number of the questions that will follow subsequent to this one. Over half the questions submitted dealt with specific age ranges. Things like, how do I keep my two and three-year-old from whining incessantly about everything that they want? Or how do I deal with a 12-year-old that thinks the perfect pair of jeans is more important than loving her brothers? Questions of every age group. A lot of them are gender specific. A lot of them had to do with siblings, with birth order, with just keeping sanity in the home due to all the changing, sometimes violently changing relationships and dynamics and transitions over time. So transitions and moving kids through stages and how discipline works itself in and works itself out of defiant, disobedient 2-year-olds and rebellious 14-year-olds, those all link together in a unique and powerful way. And so what we're going to do to answer all those questions and just sort of set the stage for where we're going to launch from tonight is we're going to talk through a couple of concepts for just a couple of minutes. And so if you'll put that slide, Richard, of the friendship model. Do y'all have this in your hand? Y'all have this in your hand. Some of you have probably seen this model. The model is a funnel, and it's really not about a funnel. A funnel is something you pour something into. It doesn't have anything to do with depth here. It's not what we pour into this. It's a shape. It's a shape that starts narrow at the bottom and gets wider at the top. And so the shape serves this illustration. Now keep in mind this is not a formula, but these are some concepts that are going to be real helpful to you as you look down the road toward the end goal. And I think with anything we want to accomplish, the most important thing we can do is look toward the end and see where we want to land and then work back from there. So you can work back to a 16, 17-year-old, if that's what you're here hoping to learn about tonight. You can look as far back as a newborn. Some of you may be pregnant with your first child. It's a great time to learn how to look down the road 18, 20 years to this thing called friendship. And it's not a perfect word, but if friendship is the ultimate goal, the reason I like friendship is because the implication is that it's a mutual relationship. We enjoy each other. We like being around each other. They don't want to leave their parents all the time. And we like it when they're around. And we don't like it when they're around all the time in that friendship. It's just a real mutual friendship. So with that as a goal, with a healthy adult relationship where they have left the home and are prepared as they can to move successfully into the adult world to be healthy, mature, responsible adults, how do we get there? Well, there's three phases, and I just want to describe them briefly, and then our couples here are going to take it from there. Begin with the establish authority phase. And so the reason it's narrow down at the bottom, so age starts at the bottom and age goes up. So the very bottom of the funnel down in the little green section, that's age zero. And then up at the top, we're kind of looking at 18, 20, 22, somewhere in the they've become adults and they've been launched. So we'll say birth to launch goes from bottom to top. And then left to right, freedoms are expressed that way. So the reason the funnel starts narrow is because freedoms are very limited at the beginning, and that's purposeful and intentional. As you all know, if you either have or have had young children, if you give them a whole lot of freedom, they can't handle it. They are not prepared or made to handle excessive freedom. There's a lot of decisions that are inappropriate and they're not equipped to make yet. There's responsibility they're not prepared for. So we want to make decisions for them. We want to lead them by establishing authority. The greatest thing about establishing authority in the early years is that we're actually teaching them that as humans, we are designed and made to live underneath God's authority. God's put you as a parent in place to establish authority to model him and his relationship with his people, that they have a desire for him as well. Moving up the funnel, freedoms are expanded into the develop responsibility phase. Somewhere between age 7 and 12, kids move out of the established authority phase. Hopefully, authority has been established, and you can start giving them freedoms. A lot of these freedoms are earned. It's not a perfect funnel. It kind of goes like this as you're parenting, because you might give freedoms. They might abuse them. Consequences come in. So it'll be unique and different with each child. But a hallmark of this develop responsibility phase is that we want to teach kids to be contributors in the home, not consumers. They've been consuming as small children all their lives, totally dependent. But we're moving them towards a little bit more independence, and so we want to teach them to carry some weight, to contribute. We want to teach them that they use and consume this home, so they've got to take some responsibility and share some of the weight of that. As we move up with intentional parenting to the facilitate independence phase, it's a unique time. And I like the word facilitate because it really does imply. Facilitate means that we're just helping. We're handing them over to a new level of independence. But what's so cool, as we're doing that, giving them some wings, encouraging them, pushing them out the door, they're driving, they're attracted to the opposite sex, there's some new things going on, and they're exploring the world. We want to give them rope to do that. But for the handful of unique years during this phase, they're in our home, under our roof, and they get to come home after experiencing and engaging the world, and we get to interface with them. Get to walk through life with them during those final years. So we're going to explore those in a little more detail with each couple. So the Cavins are going to begin, and I've asked them to just take a few minutes and talk through the established authority phase. So they're going to talk through a couple of questions. What were some unique things that were struggles for them, or some things they wish they'd been told and known during this phase. So they're just going to kind of give us a little more detail about that. Thanks.
I think the big thing, as we talked about this and tried to tackle looking back 10, 12 years for our kids, is really taking the opportunity to enjoy the stage. Leanne will talk about it a little bit, even though it's going to wear you out. So those who are in the middle of it right now, you're worn out. And I wish I can encourage you and tell you that you don't need to be, but you're going to be. And that's what it takes. If you see in the middle of the funnel where it says intentional parenting, that intentionality takes effort. And that's the big thing when we talk about establishing authority, because at the youngest age, and we'll give a few examples here, the youngest age, even with our son when he was 14 months, maybe not even that old, where we're working on authority issues and he sees where discipline comes into play with authority, looking ahead to when he launches, whether that's 18 or 21 or 22, when he launches out of our home, either after high school or after college, just trying to say, does he understand what authority means? And recognizing that it started when he was old enough to comprehend certain things. And for Mac, that was a situation where even at, God, was it even 14 months? 10 months, maybe, to pop on the hand. 10 months, maybe. We used to do this thing. This was before we had any kind of parent training, any kind of information, really. We were just kind of getting going, had just started coming to Grace, so just starting to get in community. And we, you know, we did the count. You know, I'm going to count to three. Don't get your hand off that. I'm going to count to three. Recognize that even at 10 months, you're counting to three. It's not going to do you any good. So that's one of the things we learned, because don't touch that, Mackenzie. One, two, and he says three. And pops his own hand. So they know, and they know at a very young age, this was 10 months, they know at a very young age where authority is, and that they're, whether they can comprehend that they're designed to be under authority, they know innately what that makeup is. So it starts very early, and you'll be, like I said, you'll be worn out. But I think one of the things we forget is to be able to appreciate some of that effort. You want to? I know you had some thoughts about that.
Yeah, I guess my thoughts would be that it is a lot of effort. It is a time that you do have to choose to be intentional in your parenting. That was hard for me. I'm very task-oriented, so that meant in the midst of unloading the dishwasher, because I really wanted to get that done today, and I felt like I had been disciplining and being engaged in parenting all day. So I'm trying to finish that but I'm still barking, you know, direction over my shoulder, which they're really not paying attention to. So I'm only getting a little more frustrated that I'm trying to get this task done that hasn't been able to get done, and that's going on. So it was a challenge for me to balance that and understand that maybe the task that I wanted that day wasn't as important as the task at hand with them. And that meant being intentional. That meant stopping what I was doing, getting down on my knees, grabbing their little face, making sure, you know, they heard me, they were looking at my eyes, knew the instruction, so then they could go forward and obey. But one of the things also for me was those first 6 months of being a mom. I wish someone had told me that there would be days that I did not like it. I felt alone and I felt isolated. Mac's a great kid. I feel like y'all are going to leave here going, oh my goodness, this kid. You know, but the first 6 months, he cried and he cried and he cried and he did not sleep and he cried. And I just remember walking and thinking I was the only person awake in Greenville, and just how lonely that was. And not really enjoying it, not feeling some of the sweet feelings that I thought I was supposed to feel, and feeling so isolated. So that's something I wish I would have heard someone say, because that was just an open door for attack, where I felt like I was the only mom that had ever not loved every minute of it. So if you're in that spot, I would just encourage you, keep going. I love it now. And so that was one of the things for us.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we're going to move up the funnel to the develop responsibility phase, and the Mylanders down on the end are going to unpack that a little bit for us from their experience.
Yeah, we've been asked to talk about the ages from 7 to 12, and in that age, in our house, we stopped spanking by that time, and we had to move on to being more creative with our discipline. And I always say that that first stage was really hard physically. But then as you move up, mentally it gets a little bit harder because you have to really think about the heart issues and what motivated them to whack their sister or hit their mom or something. And so some things that we did was we took away something they loved, whether it be the PlayStation, or we had one child that was really social, so we'd take away play dates, which, you know, they're great things, but when he had to sit with his family, it was torture for him, as opposed to being with his friends. And we'd also assign extra work, particularly with the boys. Our daughter liked to do the work, and so it wasn't as good of a punishment for her. But the boys didn't like to do work. And so, you know, cleaning baseboards, toilets, whatever I really needed to get done was a really good tool to help them. But I agree with Leanne in that taking the time to really sit down and talk to them about why they did what they did was so important. In the beginning, I didn't feel like I had the teaching to really know that. I did more behavior modification out of my pride and what kind of parent I would look like. And so finally, when I was reading, and one day it just clicked that, wow, it doesn't really matter what my kids look like. It really matters what their heart is like. And so then I'm task-oriented as well. And so it's very hard for me to not only stop and think about this punishment for them, which I knew was going to affect me, because if they weren't playing PlayStation, then they were going to be fighting, and then I was going to have to deal with that. And so sometimes, you know, I didn't want to inconvenience myself with the punishment. But it's so worth it. It's so worth it to stop and to take that time to talk to them about what their heart, you know, try to help them recognize how their heart was in that situation. Another big area in that age was I really struggled with the consistency of giving chores. For me, it's easier to do it myself, so I preferred to do it myself, and part of my pride in being a stay-at-home mom was I felt like if I did it myself, then, you know, my kids would be so lucky because they could just play and I'd be this great mom. And I ended up creating monsters who didn't want to do work. And so I learned that it was important for them to manage their time and to have chores. And so when we started implementing it, it was so much better, because then they were proud, too, of what they accomplished. So, nice.
For us, when Sherry and I talked about a little bit about this, kind of get our thoughts together, this was a major life change time for us, for a couple of our kids, as we moved from Milwaukee down to South Carolina. And so we were dealing with that, as well as, you know, trying to get them into just plugged into church, into school, and what did that look like, and also holding them accountable for things that we were giving them, but also realizing they're also in a very delicate stage as far as for socially and really trying to get them through that. So that was a big piece of the puzzle for us on that one. I'm prior military, and so for me, my expectations for our kids a lot of times were pretty high. And so sometimes I had to have Sherry really just take me to the side sometimes and say, you know what, I don't know that they're capable of what you're asking at this point. What you're asking is a little bit above what they can actually handle. And so that was a big struggle for me. One of the things, too, that I really feel like I wish that someone would have told me about this age is their just the uniqueness of them to start to develop and some of their interests, to really to start to look at what do they gravitate to? What are their strengths at this age? And what do they have a lot of passion about? And even if it's not something that I thought, well, you know, they could be this as they get older. You know, the question, what are you going to be when you grow up? I kind of didn't want to be that parent of asking them, what are you going to do? So I kind of backed off of that. But I wish I would have, I guess, been a little bit more intentional in watching some of that, just to see interests of, you know, whether it was, you know, video, or whether it's, you know, a big thing for our house was sports. So that was easy, but to look at that and say, well, okay, how is that going to fit into your life other than, you know, what are, you know, to be well-rounded, what else are you going to do besides sports? So
it's good. Thank you. And if y'all run out of things for your boys to do, we could use some baseboard cleaners. So thank you for that. The Chaberas are going to talk a little bit as we move up the funnel about the facilitating independence phase that they are in or have been in.
Facilitating independence phase. That's a really nice term for the teen years, I tell you. That's the best term
that's
I've heard.
Pretty, isn't it?
You know, you survive these two phases and you got this to look forward to. No, seriously. You know, when you think about, first of all, let me just say this. We read so much about the teen years that was negative. You know, hold your breath. You got to fight your way through it. It's going to be all these bad things. Let's just dispel that early. It's not that bad. In fact, it's some of the best years of parenting. And I think some of the greatest moments you can have with your children are in those teen years, because they become little adults. And seeing them begin to really own their faith, that's their faith, it's not your faith. Seeing them take responsibility, it is some of the best times of parenting. So let's just get that out front and be encouraged. Now, it has its moments, no doubt about it. I mean, if you ask me what the biggest challenge of the teen years for me was, it had more to do with me than it did them. Because what they're going through, they're going to do some things that you're going to think are divinely orchestrated to just raise your blood pressure. You're going to think they are doing this just to get back at me for popping me on the hand all those times when I was little, or whatever it was. And so for me, it exposed some sin in my life and really some idol worship, if you will. And the biggest challenge for me was learning to not parent out of emotion in those times. And so, my teenage child would do something that shouldn't have done, or I was disappointed with. And whatever it was in me that wanted to have these kind of perfect kids that never did anything wrong, that, you know, were just the apple of your eye. Well, that began to get destroyed. And as a result, I parented not from a healthy place. And I'll never will forget, I read it in a book. It's one of the books that's recommended here. It's called Age of Opportunity. I think it's the best book written for that segment of life, written by Paul Tripp. And basically what he explained to me, and it was a very spiritual moment for me when he said, parents, you need to begin to see your child's mess-ups, whatever they may be in those teen years, not as situations that were designed to raise your blood pressure, but as opportunities for their redemption. And in that moment, parent, as you walk into that room, you need to see yourself as God's man or woman for the job, as God's ambassador in that moment. And that just changed my whole view. And it helped me to walk calmly into those situations and say, you know, God's got this. It's going to work out. I need to have a long-term view. But I need to speak on his behalf in this moment and not speak like an angry, emotional parent. And that's easier said than done, as you well know. But that was probably my biggest challenge.
One challenge, as these young ones become, you know, they're starting to become independent. And I mean, for us, they're young men now. And so it's not only do they think they're, they just know everything. I mean, they kind of know it all. They think they should make their own rules. I mean, because they're becoming these adults. And so just staying strong on your boundaries and your rules and your expectations, and because they'll question that, and you'll be going, really? Are they? Yeah, maybe they're old enough. Or but just keeping those boundaries and staying the course with that. A few years, Matt was in college last couple years, and he interned at a church, and he worked with a group of 12th grade boys, and they were doing a purity talk, and he was just blown away at how many of these young boys were just pretty deep into pornography. And he came home once, and he was just like, Mom, Dad, thank you for having so many blocks on our computer that we couldn't even do our homework, you know. But thank you, because he just went off about that these kids are into this because their parents are, their heads in the sand. And so anyway, just, you've got to stay strong with the boundaries. They need them. They love them. They want them at all of the ages. So.
Yeah, they will whine and complain about them at the time, but they really do love them. And the last thing I would just share, you know, that thing that I wish somebody had emphasized more to us, coming into this, when we came along, there was a guy named Josh McDowell who wrote a lot of books on raising kids, and he emphasized the statement, and it is so true. He said, rules without relationship equals rebellion. And we have seen the fruit of that simple statement in raising teens. As long as you can keep that relationship intact, you have a voice in their life. The minute you lose that relationship, you kind of lose that influence. And so, you know, it's so easy sometimes when they mess up to want to exact a pound of flesh out of them. And that's the easy thing to do. And sometimes they need that. Don't get me wrong. But other times, they need to see mercy and they need to see grace. Abraham Lincoln said one time, he was notorious for pardoning people who maybe deserve punishment. And he said one time, he says, I've learned that there's far greater fruit in mercy than there is in justice. And with teenagers, like I say, you'll get your pound of flesh. They'll do something that will require a consequence. But there are so many situations where mercy is the better answer. And you can show them, you can illustrate to them grace, and at the same time, keep that relationship intact, which is so important.
Thanks. Thanks, all of you. There's a lot more we can unpack about each of these phases, and hopefully these stages will continue to come to life as we talk specifically over the course of the next little while about these questions that we have. A few things that I heard that I'll just point out in each of their answers lead us to the next question. The first one we're going to deal with is on generational sin. I heard a few things that I sort of wrote down and circled. Behavior modification, parenting out of emotion, rules without relationship equals rebellion. And so these are all ideas that have likely, I'm not going to pin that on each of them, but likely have come from a poor parenting model on the front end. So when we all look back at the homes that we came from, we should respect and love our parents the way we are called to. We all come from different stories, but there's no question that the Bible is very clear, and you probably live out every day very clear ways that generational sin, ways that generational patterns that are not healthy, that are dysfunctional, are automatically and by default passed into your life, that subsequently into your marriage, and they take on a whole new monstrous life in our parenting. We all know what it's like to see our mom in us or to see our dad in us and how we deal with our parents. And so this idea of generational sin, God warns us about it and cautions us against it in Scripture. He also says that generational patterns are a good thing. It says generational godliness should be perpetuated. So as parents, we have an option. We can either perpetuate generational sin, or we can do the hard work of intentional and purposeful parenting to begin to replace those patterns in our own souls first and then subsequently into our parenting to create patterns of generational godliness. And it won't be perfect in our kids. It'll be generations and generations and years of cycling sin, either forward or backwards. But it's going to happen. It's reality and it's life generationally the way God created it within family. So the first question is, please offer some advice on dealing with generational sin and breaking these sin patterns so that they're not passed down. And I'm going to pass this to the Cavins. I think they have a specific thought about a little window from their parenting.
We do. Leanne has a great example that we've experienced within our family. But I think looking back on parenting and thinking about my biggest fear of raising our children, it is around generational sin. And yeah, I'm not going to sit up here and trash my parents or Leanne's parents, but being able to recognize deficiencies in the parenting models that we both grew up in, and seeing those, where there may have been a lack of having a Christ-centered home and using God's authority within our home to help our parents raise us and our brothers and sisters. And then really trying to, if you've been in small group or in any kind of group with me, you've heard me say this 1,000 times, because it's the one thing probably that stuck with me from Men's Roundtable better than anything else, is breaking that cycle. And as I approach parenting going, man, I hope I don't do that. I hope I don't handle this or that like my dad did. Or, boy, what Leanne's told me, I hope I don't handle this like her dad. Or, and really just almost frozen with a fear of stepping into a situation and then feeling that come on. You've all been in that situation where something's going on and you can feel, if there was a mirror in front of me right now, I'd be looking right at my dad and trying to jump back from that and really see where I am. And recognizing that we have tools and resources available to us, especially here at Grace, some of the resources that we've talked about, and particularly with Men's Roundtable. You're going to hear us talk about that a lot, the Young Men's Roundtable that's coming up. Please take advantage of that. There are great resources and great language. The biggest one is the passivity. And I saw that, and I think Leanne could nod her head, yes, especially early on in our marriage. I was turning into my dad, and it didn't have anything to do with anger or abuse or anything. It had everything to do with just being passive and letting her do things that she was good at and that I was willing to let her be good at. So really trying to break that and recognizing that I could was important as part of a generational sin to break that cycle. And I've seen dividends already with Mac. Leanne said you're going to think he's a bad kid. He's a great kid. He's a great young man. And part of that is him being able to recognize where there have been cycles that have been broken. I think Leanne's got a great example, a great story.
I would just quickly share that it is important to be intentional and to be looking. Mac attended a men's roundtable with Wes, within the last 2 years. And we left a situation at my sister's where my dad was there and actually went through an entire visit without speaking. And it was very hurtful. And this is not the first thing. This is years. And he learned that from his dad. He learned that from his dad. And you can see it all down the line. Well, we go to get in the car, and Wes says one of his usual,
There was a football player at the University of Miami in the early 90s named Carlos Huerta. He was a kicker, if you remember him. And anytime we get ready to go somewhere, I will say Carlos, and the kids know where to.
It's a little corny, and it's one of those dad jokes. And so that he says that as we get in the car, Mac just, in one of those moments, Mom, why does Dad do that? I'm like, I don't know, bud. I don't know why some dads do what they do. And I said, in fact, I don't know why my dad did what he did. And I said, I'm sorry. And at that point, he opens up. He said, but Mom, he's done the best he could do because he had that generational sin. He said, he's just in that cycle. but he broke the cycle and that he stopped some of it because there was alcoholism and abuse and a number of things within my grandparents and great-grandparents, you know, line and trajectory that it was going. Well, he stopped it, and that's what Mike said. Well, you know, Papa stopped it. He didn't know how to be active and pursue something better, so he didn't get us going in the right direction. He said, but Dad's done that. And then in typical, you know, teenage boy form, you know, he said, and I'll take it the rest of the way. You know, and so, but he does have that understanding, and he had language, and we had an opportunity to actually sit and process that together and looking for those things.
Thank you. Very good. We'll move on to the next question, but I want to remind the panel, you're invited to be in conversation. So if you have something, feel free to interject that. Next one is on dating. We had a number of questions about this. Several of a bunch of you all are probably moving into this if you're not already in this season of life. How should we handle dating with our growing teenage children? Chaberos?
Okay. let me put a big disclaimer on the front end of this. I'm going to let Cindy describe kind of what we experienced and how we approached it, but I'm going to warn you up front. You know how when you see those TV shows that say, don't try this at home? We're not saying that. We're not advocating how we did it. God was, again, very merciful and graceful in how he dealt with us. But I think we can share something from what we've gone through.
Yeah, there's so many different views on dating, and this just happens to be the route that we took. But and just so you know, boy or girl, they will like the opposite sex. I promise. You cannot get away from it. You cannot say you can date when you're 30, because it's just going to happen. So how you handle it is, you know. But what we did is we did let them have girlfriends in high school, our first two sons. But it was very family-oriented. The girls would come to our house. We would watch family movies. They would be shooting basketball. It was very family-oriented. And I always called the girl's mom, started building relationship, you know, getting to know her, getting to know the family. Are they supervised? I mean, just always knowing that they had eyes everywhere, even at her house. And so that's kind of the way we did it. The advantage of that, I'm not sure that that was the perfect solution. It wasn't. God was gracious. But the advantage of that, me having three boys, I was the only girl. They were hardly ever around. And most of the time, I'm like one of the guys. But it was an opportunity for when they were around those girls, when they left, I would say, you know, you didn't open the door, like, you know, and, you know, you can't punch her in the arm like you do your brother. So it really was an opportunity for me as a woman to be able to speak into them and tell them, you know, that probably really hurt her feelings, because girls are sensitive. And so I was able to talk to them a lot about what I saw with that, you know, relationship going on. And they did a lot of things in groups that they were around females too. Now, Nick, our youngest one, he is just like, I'm not dating until I get to college, and then I'm going to find a wife and marry her. So we won't be able to see that with him, and that's okay. That's a wonderful way to do it too. So.
But Nick's going to miss out on some heartache too by doing it that way. I mean, you know, because it wasn't all great. I mean, there were some tough times in there. It's because he saw his brothers and what they went through.
Well, what he really witnessed was that when they would break up with their little friend that they were talking to, I think that's the word now, their friendship was over. They weren't friends anymore. You know, he's.
So I guess you could summarize what we did. It was kind of like a controlled experiment. But like any experiment, things can blow up and people can get hurt. And so we're not advocating it. But I do think that I'm thankful for Cindy was able to mentor our boys and how to treat a woman in that environment. And that's why I think God blessed with that. And they're both the two older boys are dating very godly young girls now that we hope they're going to marry. So, you know, again, God was gracious.
I just really want to reemphasize getting to know that the girl that your sons, for us, it's our sons, our daughters, not that at that age yet, but just to get to know the girl enough to where she feels comfortable, how she's interacting, or how he's interacting in your home. How does he treat you in conversation? Is he engaging or is she engaging in conversation when you're going through that? And just to be able to talk to your kids about that afterwards, and making sure that they see that's a good thing that they're engaging. Or do you think that would have been better if they would have done X, Y, or Z? So.
I'm not sure how I feel about the whole thing. it's challenging. It's really hard. But I will say we kind of challenged our son last year to start pursuing someone while he was in our home, because we saw that he was kind of getting this pattern of maybe liking someone if he knew they liked him, but he wasn't really pursuing who he thought God had for him, and the characteristics and the qualities that he would be looking for in a wife. So we kind of challenged him to do that, and he did, and it was a really good experience in that he would come home and be just an open book of just, this is what happened, and how do I handle this, and, she said this, and wow, is that what girls mean? I mean, he just is kind of naive to the whole thing, and he was just great about asking questions, and a lot of times, we wouldn't have the answer and we would say, we'll get back to you with that. But the fact that he was willing to talk to us about it was just so great. And we'd talk a long time in bed at night about it, because we'd say, oh, can you believe he shared that with us? And I mean, it was really, really good, but so it's hard. I don't know what the best way is, but that's what he did. And it proved to be a good experience. So
that's great. Thank you. Yeah.
Jump in. One of the things that we've talked about with Mac is at the age where he's starting to notice girls, and Morgan being 11 going on 12, we've been talking with them for several years about as they approach an age where they would start dating, we don't put out a number, but whatever that is, that they guard their heart. That has started at a young age, 8, 9 years old even. When you start, you will start liking people of the opposite sex. You just have to guard your heart in every situation. Don't give away your heart at 12 years old. And that was a big deal. If we, all of us in this room, think back, when we were in middle school, I had a girlfriend in middle school. Things were different a generation ago. I'm not sure what a girl would have seen with me in middle school, maybe even now. But thank you, sweetie. I can think back giving my heart away several times. And the heartache, Mike, you mentioned there will be heartache. And as much as you can preach to your children about not giving the heart away, there's probably still going to be heartache. But it's something that you can reinforce with them and help walk them through. And it all goes back to being intentional again. Intentional about every piece of parenting. It's not intentional about discipline, not intentional about authority, but it's intentionality about every piece of parenting. And that's why it's so difficult and why you get worn out. But it's rewarding on the back end. At every age, that you see rewards and you see benefits, and you get to celebrate those successes with your children as they grow up.
Thank you.
Ed, can I throw one more thing onto that? Mm-hmm. When Wes talked about guarding their heart, I think that's important too for us with our boys. We really talked to them about protecting that girl's heart as well. That was a big piece of that puzzle as well for them to be able to say, Men's Roundtable gave us some language, and so did the one series, to talk about intimacy and what does that mean. And not going so deep that you're leading a girl to a point where she thinks this is going further than where you're going to go with it. And that was a big deal to talk with them about that, too. So.
Yeah, protect brings up the three P words that we're beginning to incorporate into our masculinity language. And if you're taking notes, you should write this down. You may have heard it, but it's pursue, protect, and provide. And pursue, protect, and provide are just three categories, and there's a lot of ways to come up underneath those three categories as you're talking to your sons. But at every age, your boys are able to understand, or at least they're designed to understand that they are to pursue, protect, and provide. Those are three categories of their leadership and their design as men and as growing men. So in the context of dating, those are categories you can ask them about, talk through. Those three core capacities of masculinity actually go sort of hand in hand with their sister capacities. And some of you women have been through the Azair study, invite, nurture, and partner. Those three categories are ways that you can talk with your young women in your home who are dating. Were you inviting? Were you nurturing? Were you partnering? And some of that, we may talk a little more about some of that tonight. But those are some language and some categories that we can learn from and use as a discussion tool. It's really helpful, I think, as our kids are growing. Great discussion, a great segue into our next topic, sex and sexuality. A number of you asked about that. At what age do we begin, and how do we begin, and how do we continue offering guidance to our growing children on how they should approach sex and sexuality? How do we approach that with them? Mylanders, y'all want to give that a shot?
This is one of those areas, the generational sin that we talked about earlier, that I felt like I really had to break. My sex talk that I had from my dad was, here's a book. Let me know if you have any questions. And so for me, I knew I wasn't going to do that to my boys. And what we ended up doing is we used a resource called Preparing Your Son for Every Man's Battle. And there's a portion of that where you as a dad, you read through some pages. And then what you do is you read through. You can either read it at separate times, but we chose to read it together at the same time. We'd read a page out loud. A little awkward sometimes when you come across some as it gets a little deeper into some of those subjects. But for our oldest, it was kind of neat. It was kind of the rite of passage for him even before that, because he approached us about his bedtime and came to us and kind of negotiated a later bedtime. And so that gave us the opportunity to, when his younger brother went to bed, that was the time that we'd take out that book and we'd read together. There was questions at the end of it. And so we've discussed those questions. And there's a part where, dad, tell your son, when you were this age, what did you do about this? And son, tell your dad how you feel about this right now. And so it opened up discussion. It was, first it was very, very forced. It felt a little uncomfortable. But as we got into that second chapter, third chapter or so, it just opened up and it gave us a benchmark to be able to talk and gave us the language. Especially when it started talking about the hormones and some of the things that they were dealing with and not sure why they felt a certain way. I could go back to that book and say, remember when we read about this and we had those questions? That's what you're dealing with right now. And so they had a point of reference as well. So it's been good. Even right now, I would say also it's not just a one time or even just through that book. It's continual. There's things when they come home from school and we're talking, it may be conversation over the dinner table sometimes, and we're like, okay, let's talk about it right now. So it's pretty open, and Gab's kind of been brought into that as well. So
yeah, and I would say probably by fifth grade they knew everything, and that's really hard. That was really hard for me, and it feels so young, and I felt like I was robbing their innocence and telling them so much. But our kids go to public school, and I knew they were going to hear it, and we wanted them to hear it the right way. So we chose to do it that way and let them know everything. And we did tell them at any time, you can have any questions. They have sex ed in school, and so it's always very funny because they get really hacked that they have to miss gym to go to sex ed because they think they know it all. But they always come home and they say, I'll say, do you have any questions? And they'll giggle and laugh. But then eventually they'll kind of start talking about some things. And it's been such an open dialogue. Nothing is forbidden. I mean, they lay it all out there, and we're really glad for that because it's important.
Yeah, kind of like Doug. I did better than my dad. I had two 30-second conversations with my dad in my lifetime about sex, and neither one of them I would repeat here. And that's probably two more than he had. So for me, it was a lot of work, and I had to get up a lot of courage to have the conversations that I need to have with my boys. And I think looking back, and we've learned this, that they were probably too event-driven and not more in the flow of everyday conversation. We did Passport to Purity when they were, you know, reaching puberty. We did a program called Raising a Modern Day Knight when they went off to high school. We did a thing when they went away to college. So I would muster up enough courage to have that talk with them, you know, at these important milestones in their life. But it was hard for me. And so it was, I think, a little awkward for them. One thing I learned was sometimes when I'd have a periodic conversation with him, Cindy would prompt me, says, I think you need to check in with so-and-so on how he's doing in a particular area. I like to have him in the car because that way we're both looking ahead and we didn't have to look at each other. Because, you know, it was awkward for them as it was for me. So at least I could get it out and not have to deal with that awkward moment. So, yeah, why don't you tell what Matt told us?
Couple years ago, we asked one of our sons how we did in the sex area, and he quickly said, you did pretty good, but, and you kind of hold your breath when they say but, and he just said, but I'm going to do a better job with my kids, as in, he said, it will be it just everyday conversation, just flows all throughout, and he's, you know, when he told us we did the events, and it wasn't as much of an everyday conversation. It wasn't as comfortable. And so, anyway, there was a but.
So he's off at college and he comes home one weekend and he tells us a story about being over at a house of one of his friends at their parents' house who lived near the college. And he says a bunch of college kids are sitting around and it's about midnight and the parents are in the room. And the parents look at my son and his friends and say, y'all need to go now. And they're like, why? And the parents look at him and say, because we want to go have sex now. And my son was just, you know, he was shocked. But in that home, that's how open they were. You know, they didn't think anything about it. But for my son, he was like, my parents don't talk like that. I don't know when they have sex, but they never let us know, you know.
Oh, that's funny. It's good. Let's see. What are we doing here? That's good. I think this is a great another segue, actually, into a question that a number of people asked in a variety of ways. But it's something that we all it's something that all parents experience, especially as your kids get older. Play dates are introduced. They begin to venture out into the neighborhood. They're at school. Wherever they are encountering other people, the world begins to infiltrate our self-contained, protected little world as our kids are growing. So a number of questions centered around this. How do you balance protecting your child from exposure to the world versus being culturally engaged with families that live and parent much differently than ours? It's a great question. It's actually a really difficult question, and I'm really glad that I'm the facilitator of this discussion because I'm going to take some notes because we struggle with this all the time, is that we have what we would call our natural parenting style at our house, and we have things that we want for our kids, and we want a blend of both of those. We do want a balance, but it's hard to find that balance. So I'd love to hear from each of y'all and maybe start with the Cavins. How do you balance protecting your children from exposure to the world versus being culturally engaged for their sake and with families that live and parent differently than ours?
I think for us, it's really recognizing, and I know Mike had mentioned this earlier as well, recognizing personality differences in our children and being able to expose them to different situations based on what we think their personality can handle, whether that be at a certain age or a certain type of event. Our children are almost opposites in terms of their personality. Mac is real reserved, laid back. You never can tell if he's uptight or bothered. And Morgan is full speed ahead, outgoing, butterfly. And there was a situation we just, and I think we'll probably talk about this a little bit, is from a schooling perspective, our children had been homeschooled, and as we talked about together, when we knew at some point that they were going to pass our ability to teach them anymore, probably a long time ago for me, and really trying to decide when do we integrate them into school, and the answer was really different for both of our children. When we would integrate Mac into school, was we integrated him in this year as an eighth grader, and it was a perfect time. If we had integrated him in the sixth grade like Morgan is, he would have probably gotten eaten alive just because of his personality and his makeup. So even a situation of approaching school could be different for your children. For us, in terms of how we engage different types of parenting styles, it's a little bit easy for us as we think about, I think about my family, my extended family. With I have two sisters and a brother, and when we get together for a holiday, and probably a lot of you are like this, your family's all over the spectrum in terms of what they believe, how they act, how they parent. My oldest sister is a homosexual, and she brings her partner to our family gatherings. So dealing with that and exposing our children to that at a fairly young age, battling whether we should or whether we shouldn't, and taking the step to do that was important, because we're actually able in that situation to walk our children through why we disagree, what our belief system is, and what Scripture tells us about that. So being able to expose it to different situations was helpful for us, and really not trying to hide behind, not that there's necessarily anything wrong with protecting our children. We should. That's one of those core tenets of being a man, is being able to protect your family, but also the right level of protection at the right times. Would you add anything?
I think one of the things, and you know, when we would get back in the car from different events or going different places, we would talk about just a family identity. You know, we even for the longest time have done a family cheer. We pray together. We cheer before they go to school. We haven't done it in a while. We used to do it before Wes went to work. We mentioned it last night talking through some of this with Morgan. She goes, "We need to do that again. I miss that." You know, so there's a, you know, a 12-year-old looking forward to, you know, the family cheer. He wasn't there. But it just gave us an identity where we could even have times that we would disagree, you know, among believers and friends and people that we do life with, and go, you know what, but we're not going to do that for our family. So we would go back to what the cabin team or what the cabin family was going to do was going to be different. And that was okay, that our standard wasn't the world. Our standard wasn't even our neighbor, but we were going to, you know, hold out Scripture and find what worked in our home. And some of the things, and we would talk to them about that there's not a right or wrong, but mom just likes LaShore peas. So that's what we're going to do. You know, that's going to be the cabin choice, you know. And so we would talk through that. So it would just be an identity for us, and it gave us language.
Y'all going to do that family cheer tonight?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
If I had suggested a morning family cheer to my wife, I wouldn't be sitting here tonight. Right? This is a great question, and I think, you know, all of us as parents want our children to be lights in a dark world. I guess what I would say is be sensible about this. For young children, I'm a big fan of protecting their innocence for as long as you can. The world is going to creep in. You don't have to worry about them being culturally engaged. No matter how hard you try, it's going to come in there. But do everything you can to protect that innocence for as long as you can. You know, as far as being sensible, I mean, there are things as an adult man that I'm not going to go to. I'm not going to be involved in, because I know my weaknesses and I know I shouldn't be there. I'm not going to justify that by saying I'm being culturally engaged. And so with your children, you have to look at personality type. You'll have children who are born leaders, who you can put at a relatively young age in a situation that you might not be able to put your child who's a born follower, because it's just too risky. They're going to have plenty of time to be that light that you need to be, but just be sensible about that and manage it, because, you know, the whole school issue comes into play. And on this panel, we've got homeschool, private school, public school represented. And people will ask me, say, what should I do with my kids? What school should I send them to? Homeschool, private school, or public school? And I say, yes, all of them. God's going to raise up godly kids in all three of those environments. And that's a unique decision based on the unique needs of your family, the personality of your child, what you're trying to accomplish. And don't get so hung up. There's not one right answer. Yet you have to evaluate it, on a case-by-case basis.
Anything to add to
guess I could, I'm sorry, I could speak to the practical side of it maybe a little. One way that we have done it, you know, our kids are in public school, and so definitely we come across this often. We try to have the kids at our house instead of the kids going there. Or we can limit time at those houses maybe. And we always have conversations before about, you know, now what do the Mylanders do? You know, and we always give them a way out of if you're in a situation and you know it's something that, you know, you're not allowed to do, you can blame us, you can stand strong, and you can say, I don't want to do that. But if you feel weak, you are welcome to say whatever, you know, to blame it on us and call us right away, and we'll come get you. Also, you know, like things like one of ours had a party that they could go to. It was a birthday party, and I was okay with her going for a little bit, but it was a sleepover, and I was concerned about what might happen. And so it was just a thing of, you know what, it's okay if you go there, but you're going to go there for a limited time. And she was, you know, of course, fine with that, and it worked out really good. So
one other thing, too, with our oldest, he started out as a freshman going to one school and then transferred to another school, another public school. And that was, again, going back to knowing your child and what they can handle and where they are spiritually. I actually talked with one of the staff members who was a D group leader for him just to say, is this a time in his life that he needs to have, does he need to take a stand right now and be a light where he feels like he is the only one? Or is this a time in his life when I need to surround him with some more of his peers that are believers? And it kind of came down to, you know, it's not a great time for him, personally, for him to do that. And so we chose to allow him to change schools. So that was a process. And again, not going from private to public, but from one public school to another public school with the group of kids that were there. So.
I just thought of a bubble story. Mike said keep them in their bubble and keep them protected as long as you can. I have a good friend that has a 12th grader, he and Nick are friends, but he has never been allowed to watch Harry Potter, and he's 18 years old, and he's in the 12th grade. And to me, you know, it's that's definitely keeping them in a bubble for a long time. To me, you take those opportunities, age appropriate, and you take those times, and if you're worried about Harry Potter or whatever, you watch it with them, or you do it with them, or you go there with them. And then you take that as a teaching time to talk, to discuss, you know, we don't believe in witches or whatever, you know. So anyway, that was an extreme bubble story I wanted to tell.
Yeah, and that's where I think of the words develop responsibility and facilitate independence. The parents are highly involved in developing and facilitating. We're not giving free rein to just go watch any movie you want to. We're talking through parameters. We're the boundaries are growing, but there are still boundaries. There is still a track to run inside. And again, while they're in our house for the first 18, 19 years, we can continue to process and watch movies with them, experience life with them, talk through things. Anything else on that question before we move on? I want to take, we do have a couple more questions. We may or may not get to them. I want to take maybe the remainder of our time, if you have questions, to entertain some questions from you all. So just raise your hand. I think we're small enough and cozy enough in here to hear each other. Do we have any questions? Yes, Denise. How old is this son?
That could be anywhere from 7 to 2.
So they all say that. Good.
But do boys really not know?
Yes, we know. We are being passive and we don't want to answer. That's what it comes down to. One of ours is notorious for that as well. And what I will try and do is ask him, what do you mean you don't know? And sit in that awkward silence. It's hard sometimes because you're looking at each other, And you're like, one of us has got to budge. And I know it's not going to be me at this point because I'm looking for an answer. And he, usually what ends up happening is if I've asked him, why did you do this? And he'll be like, well, I don't know. And I will tell him, that's not an answer. That is not a real answer that I'm going to accept. And again, we sit in that awkward silence for a little bit. And most of the time what ends up happening is he will break down. If it's a certain, you know, certain things, he may break down into tears and say, this is why I did it, and spill his guts. Other times he will just say, you know, Dad, this is what I was thinking. And so it becomes a dialogue. So it's just, I don't want to say it's a matter of wills, but it's being willing to sit in that awkward silence and not accepting that.
And because it's a relationship too, it's okay for them to say, you know, I don't know right now, but can I think about it for a couple minutes and get back to you? And then, you know, it's our job to go back to them and say, okay, you know, have you had some time to think about that? Because sometimes I don't know right away, and I have to process that as well. But, yeah, they always have to have some sort of answer eventually.
Yes, Allison. Just to clarify,
it's the neighbors on the other side. Right? Sorry, as Dez ducks. Mike, I know you got something. Just real, Leanne was reminding me that we actually took counsel on a similar situation from another couple on the panel to our direct right, not counting Ed. We did move. We were in a similar situation 12, 14 years ago, and my phone's ringing off the hook back here. It's probably our son at a basketball game. Come get me. Train of thought. Sorry. We were in a similar situation. And while the neighborhood wasn't a bad neighborhood, there were influences in the neighborhood that we tried to control as much as possible what our children were faced with each day. But we got to the point where we couldn't oversee that all the time, and unfortunately we did have to move. That's a big decision for a lot of people. I think what we tried to do for several years was guard, you know, to Sherry's point a few minutes ago, we invited those kids into our house as much as possibly as possible, even though we didn't necessarily like the kids. We were willing to let them in our backyard and into our house even, just so that we could have some control over what influences they were having on our children, especially at that age. Our kids were, you know, from 1 to 6 at the time.
Yeah, no, I don't have a lot to add to what Wes said. I agree with everything he said. I think kids need community just like we need community. They need friends. And so if the neighborhood kids are not the ones you want them to be around, you're going to have to figure out how you're going to allow them to have the community one way or another. Short of a move, you know, we've hauled our kids to a lot of places to be with their friends that weren't convenient for the sake of having them with friends that we knew we could trust in that situation. And sometimes that takes a little more effort, but it kept us from having to move. You know, it's a tough issue. Again, I think a lot of it, too, goes back to personality of the child. And, you know, how is it affecting them in that situation? Some kids can live through it easily, and it does not affect it. But other kids can get drawn into that. So lots of prayer on that one.
That's good. Thank you. Yes, right here.
I guess it's kind of like a double-edged sword.
He didn't look passive when you said that.
You just gave yourself the advice. Come together as one, but don't do it in front of the kids. Don't act that out in front of the kids. I mean, that, you know, I think in a sense you have a blessing there, because the plurality of your parenting together, it's been us. We're very different, and God, that's a blessing, and use it. Just don't allow it to be a source of friction between the two, particularly in front of the kids. So you got to know each other well and stay in it together. Mm-hmm. It's not a competition between the two of you. You both have the same objective, the same goal. Use your strengths and use them as one, as opposed to competing against each other.
And value that other person's strength, because in our situation, I'm the real late. I'm not called passive, laid back, easy going. I think that's what she's trying to say. Just kind of easy, laid back. I'm that. He's been the one that's like, they're going to fall off the monkey bars. And I'm like, it'll be all right. You know, and so we have, sorry. How she did it first? No, I'm just
kidding. When's the marriage seminar?
But he's rubbed off on me, where I'm more cautious and careful, and then I've rubbed off on him. And it's because I've appreciated that about him, and he's appreciated mine, instead of thinking of that as a negative.
Mike kind of jokes at marriage seminar, but I think foundational to being great parents is having a great marriage, and that your children never question if mom said this, then dad's going to disagree. That when you are one and you are in lockstep together, that eases so many concerns, even for the children. That gives them a peace that you wouldn't, I wouldn't have been able to explain 10 years ago. Just how when we're in lockstep and they see that there's no way that they can, you know, make this divide between us, that makes our job as parents that much easier.
Mm-hmm. I think with that, if I can add too, just quickly, that doesn't mean I always agreed with everything from the start. There were times that I would be standing behind the kids and went, oh, okay, that's the direction we're going, all right? And so would follow then and then make that motion of, we need to talk. You know, let's talk this out later, because, you know, I didn't necessarily agree at the start. And maybe we landed exactly there. Maybe we landed somewhere a little in between. But they weren't going to see it. And so I think it's important to give that unified front and then work out the difference during a date night or something.
Yes.
Hey, would that be an opportunity to find a mentor couple too, to help?
That
just bounce ideas off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, as Wes said, marriage is foundational to parenting, and it is of utmost importance to be the parents, and to, you know, from whether it's a unified front in parenting and getting on the same page, or just having twice, alone we can't do a whole lot, but where two or more are gathered. You know, there's so much biblical precedent for that. So I absolutely, focusing on our marriage would be another opportunity for mentor couples. And I mean, I remember at our wedding, Renee and I, during our wedding ceremony almost 18 years ago, the pastor said, he looked at me and he said, Ed, don't try to change Renee. Learn to enjoy and celebrate the difference and the uniqueness in her. And then he turned to Renee and she said, Renee, and don't try to change Ed. Dramatic pause. Let God handle that. It was a funny but really, really wonderful moment. And basically what he was saying was, you are both going to be very different, and you are both going to change over time. And Renee and I are different people than we were 18 years ago. We're different people than we were 2 years ago. And so much of that has been in the context of raising children. We're only 13 years into raising children. But God has changed us, and he has used Renee to make me the man that I was designed to be, and he's used me to make Renee the woman she was designed to be. And let's talk again in 10 years, because we're going to be people that I can't even fathom, Lord willing, and with his direction. So that's what he's up to with y'all.
I think that, Rob, that's a great point around the mentor couple and timely. Also, when I think about single parents also, because if you're a single parent, we're talking about having a really strong marriage. If you're a single parent, though, having a mentor couple, I think it would be hugely important to you, because you're going to get that opposite sex perspective that you don't necessarily have in your home, whether you're a single mom or a single dad. If you have a couple in your life that has a strong marriage and are raising good godly children, that's a couple. And don't wait on them to come to you and say, hey, I noticed that you might be struggling. Go to them and say, hey, can I meet with you guys? Search them out. Be willing to do that.
We would love to hook you up with another couple, and so let us know. We may maybe have time for one more. Yes. So your kids don't always get along? Yeah. Yeah, that's the language we can all understand. What are some tips to help foster healthy relationships when there is a natural sibling rivalry type thing going on, fighting?
Boys, girls, what are... How old are they?
10 and 9.
One time when our... boys were probably maybe 6 and 4. They were fighting all the time, so I tied their ankles together and I made them clean the garage out together. So I don't know if that's no. You remember that, don't you? Yeah. We had a good time watching that. with us, with three boys, they're going to wrestle, they're going to fight, they're going to do some things that they had competition with each other. Where we drew the line was we had an absolute that they couldn't attack the person of each other. They could not attack the individual. When it kind of crosses that line from just, spatting to really attacking the individual. And so we just had a hard line on that. When it got to that point, we stepped in. The neat thing, and you can tell this better than I can, but she and her sister talk all the time how they fought all the time growing up. They were only 2 years apart, and they are this close today. And so it's amazing how God works that out. There's hope. But just don't let it, it's going to happen, but don't let it become vicious and personal, I guess would be my only thought.
I guess the only thing I would say, too, is you as a mom, try to keep your cool. Because I know there were times when my kids were fighting and it would just escalate, and then I'd escalate and I'd blow up and they'd blow up and it was just ugly. And so I found if I went in there and was calm about it, they were much better. But also we really, really talked about the same thing that Mike said, and just making your house a safe place. Your kids are in school or they're doing all these things with other people, and it's a real negative place. Even if your kids are loved, they're constantly picked on or joked with constantly. And so we always said, when you come home and you walk in this door, things need to be uplifting and encouraging. And so they definitely still got into it and still get into it, but they know where to draw the line, and it can't be personal.
I think, too, one of the things, talking with the kids, when it would get escalated and it would get beyond that point, taking them all together and reminding them that they're siblings and that there's going to be a time when mom and I are not going to be here for you, and you are going to be the family that you have together. And that just, feeling a little bit of that weight. I think they were probably a little bit older than what your kids are right now when we had some of those conversations. But just to feel the weight of, this is what I've got left around me when mom and dad are gone to keep us connected. So
we talk at our home about being on the same team. Team Sweeney, and we talk about what it's like to go out into certain situations, and we will take opportunities when somebody's had their feelings hurt or someone saw or experienced something that was painful, how great it is that we have the safety and the intimacy of our home and our family. How wonderful of God to knit us together and give us all this same name, that we're on the same team and we are for each other, not against each other. And we take opportunities to remind them of that when they're fighting. And they're going to fight. And that's part of growing up and learning God gave them those relationships to learn how to deal with other people. But ultimately, at the end of every day, we are on the same team. We are for each other. That's language that we try to use with our kids.
You mentioned the language that you use and the relationship. We also use the Azair and Roundtable language because we've got the boy-girl combo. So we do talk through, you know, with Mac. Was that, you know, were you protecting her? You know, what were those words, you know, with her? Was that a nurturing? Did you build him up? You know, what did that do? So we actually use that language with them when they are having those moments.
That's good. There's still a bunch of hands out there. Why don't we take one more? Yes. Yeah, you know, I would say in that scenario, you're being as intentional and purposeful and communicative as you can be. You got a 5 and 6 year old. That's a tough age. It's a tough age for them to understand sort of the deeper layered concepts of serving one another, of thinking of others. They are absolutely capable of handling it, whether they act like they are or not. So you got to keep preaching it and keep teaching it. Keep reminding them in love over and over and over again. I mean, I would say my advice in that scenario is just don't give up. Just don't give up and choose your battles. You don't have to fight all the battles that you could fight. You'd never sleep if you did. But when you choose them wisely and win them. At least just don't lose them. But yeah, you don't have to win them, but just don't lose them. No, win the ones you choose and stay after it. And, you know, let the gospel, I tell you, as a parent, you get to the end of your rope, you don't know what to do. Preach the gospel to yourself. Let the good news that Jesus is sufficient and enough and has a great plan for you and your family and your child, let that be enough at the end of the day.
I would just add one thing to that. I keep a little card at my desk. It has a quote on it, and it says, until you realize that you don't have the power to change your child's heart, you'll never believe in the power of prayer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are going to be things, whether it's sibling rivalry or whether it's rebellion as a teen, that you're going to realize you have done all you can do, and it's in God's hands. And so I just want to encourage you. And if somebody asks Cindy and I today, what's the most powerful thing you've done in your kids' lives, we found another couple when our kids were very young, and systematically through the years, we got together with them and did nothing but pray for our kids. They pray for our kids, we pray for their kids, and we look back now on about 15 years of that and just see miracle after miracle after miracle, things that we tried everything, and then God just stepped in and did his thing. So just want to encourage you that way.
Just want to add one thing to that is asking two simple questions. A lot of times we have the kids where they'd be fighting. They might, you know, get to a point where they're hitting each other or say something mean. And asking that question of, okay, do you like it when somebody does that to you? And that simple question, just to get them to take a step back from themselves to say, yeah, I don't care for that so much when somebody does that to me. And then the follow-up question of, okay, well, how do you think that made your sibling feel? And so they're processing. It's you know, it's helping them through that thought process of, when I do this, I need to think about others. Kind of like what Ed said about, you know, showing love to others. But that's just kind of a practical way to put to that too.
Well, thank you all very much. Thanks for attending the first quarterly parenting conversation. I'm excited about these. I'm excited about the conversation continuing. So let me remind you, parenting@gracechurchsc.org. Parenting@gracechurchsc.org is a place where you can send questions, and we will look for venues to field answers to those questions. It's also a place to put in a request for a mentor couple, and it's something that we'd really love to help get you plugged in with. So thanks for being here. Mike, would you close us in prayer?
Before I close us in prayer, let me just say one word on maybe on behalf of the elders and the leadership of the church. One of the greatest selling points for our church is our ministry to families, and particularly the kids we've got running around here. There are some great kids running around this place. And I go back, and I just want to say thank you to Ed. I met Ed for the first time several years ago. I ran into you downtown when you had first moved back here, and you and Renee were there with Team Sweeney. And I just, in the few moments that I was with your family, I walked away and I told Cindy, that is a great family. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for being a part of this. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for what you and all the staff are doing here, because our ministry to families and our ministry, particularly to children, is it's a magnet and it's drawing people here. So thank you for that. Thank you for putting this together. Really do appreciate it. And thank you all for being here. Let me close in prayer. Father, the task of parenting is beyond us. There is just no way we can do what we're called to do as parents under our own power. So we just ask for a fresh spirit of strength tonight for all of us to help us in the situations that we're facing every day with our kids, no matter what their age is, no matter how difficult. Lord, we need your strength. We need your mercy. We need your spirit power. We ask that you give us wisdom to know what to do, when to do, and how to do it. We ask that you give us help, whether it's through a mentor couple or whatever, or a book that we need to read. Just ask that you just step in as you do so often and give us that strength that we need. I thank you for these parents here. I hope that they've been encouraged tonight. It's so easy sometimes when you hear parents talk about, you know, kind of best practices to get down on yourself and say, well, I'm not doing that. That's not why we're here tonight, Lord. We're here tonight as Christian brothers and sisters to lift each other up and to encourage one another and to know that in you we have hope. We have hope to send our children out as arrows to a dark world. And so just have everyone leave here encouraged and know that they have the strength behind them, the strength of the gospel, the strength of your mercy and your kindness in all that we do. So just pray your blessings upon that. In Christ's name, amen.